You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
I'd like to start just by touching on how Abortion Rights Aotearoa has congratulated the Ministry of Health for offering telemedicine abortion care for patients during the COVID-19 lockdown. How much do you think our recent legalisation plays a role in this provision and enables it as an essential service? Do you think we'd treat abortions the same way during a pandemic if they were still in the Crimes Act?
No, well, we know that under the old regime, of course, you had to go to your GP and then another consultant and another consultant after that. So it would have made incredibly difficult. And it would have pushed out later and later into the pregnancy when a woman could have got an abortion. And we know the later that happens, then the less safe that is. And one of the changes that happened is that the whole issue of abortion has moved from the Ministry of Justice now to the Ministry of Health,
which right.
should belong.
Moving to more Ministry of Justice type work, I saw that the Sensible Sentencing Trust this week called the continuation of amendments to the Electoral Registration Bill sneaky. I wondered what your response is to their notion that reform such as this shouldn't continue during a crisis.
Yeah, they've got a bit of a head in themselves. It's a sort of a Nick Smith driven thing, and it's all completely exaggerated. Look, no law is going to change while Parliament is suspended. The reality is that the Justice Committee has had multiple submissions on this issue over the last 2 years, and a lot of people want to see the change happening. So I think the Sensible Sentencing Trust is they live in their own little bubble, dare I say it. And it's not where a lot of other people are at. And I think anybody who speaks democracy should see this through and let the Select Committee do its job.
Let's expand on that a bit more. Explain why it is that you think prisoners whose sentences are 3 years or less deserve their right to vote.
Because we know that if they're in prison at one election, and we know because of their sentence they're definitely going to be out before the next election, then they should have a say on who is running the country that they're going to be released into as a free person. So that's the principle that we're applying. That's the democratic principle. You can't say that of people who are on longer sentences, particularly where parole is involved, because you just don't know when they're going to be released. Mm. But the legislation includes requirements for those prisoners for active steps to be taken to get them back on the roll. You see, the most insidious thing about the disqualification provision in the current law is it's not just a bar on voting, it's a bar on enrolling. And what happens is that a whole bunch of people, they get sent to a prison, they get taken off the roll, and they never come back on again, because once they get out, it's the last thing that's on their mind. Mm. And what it's effectively done is suppressed the vote of a whole bunch of people. And given that Māori are way overrepresented in our prison system, it's become an effective tool of voter suppression for a large chunk of the Māori electorate. Mm-hmm. That's the insidious thing about it. That's why it's got to change. And look, we know the Sensible Sentencing Trust, they're deeply ideological. They don't like anything like this. They don't see that a lot of the people in prison are people who have done bad things, done wrong things, made bad choices, but are people who can be redeemed. I take a more Christian view. I'm not a practicing Christian, but a view that actually people who do bad things, including really bad things, can be can be changed for the good and should be given a chance to do that. Prisoners are prolific writers of letters to MPs and I know I get a lot of them. I get these incredibly well-written, I get these incredibly beautifully handwritten letters. You know, a lot of people in prison are not unintelligent. They're thinking people too. They've just done some wrong and some bad things. Mm. And they have something to contribute in terms of ideas about, you know, what could be done to improve the country. So you can't write them off completely.
Yeah. Now, moving to another ideological body who's echoed calls about continuing reform during this pandemic, this Free Speech Coalition raised similar flags in relation to your review of hate speech law. I'd like to learn more about what our hate speech laws look like at the moment and why you believe that they are inadequate.
Yeah, there are two principal laws we have dealing with hate speech. One is the Human Rights Act, and they have a criminal provision there that makes it a criminal offence to incite disharmony on grounds of race or ethnicity, and that's it. We also have the Harmful Digital Communications Act, which was introduced in 2015 to deal with the really toxic stuff that was happening online. And you know, Judith Collins actually shepherded that legislation through. You all agreed that there was some stuff that was forms of expression online that were just completely out of order and should not be tolerated, even in a democracy like ours that celebrates those freedoms. So the question is whether the rules we've got around those are adequate. I think the Harmful Digital Communications Act largely does its job. We've got a good system there. NetSafe basically administers the complaints regime. There's a criminal aspect to it that if you're ordered to take something down and you don't, then that's a criminal offence. But I think the provisions in the Human Rights Act don't go far enough. We have multiple grounds of discrimination in this country. You can't be discriminated against on grounds of sexuality or sexual identity. Things other than in religion, things other than ethnicity or race. And I think that's where we need to look, that you can incite disharmony on those other grounds, but not be committing a criminal offence. And I just think that is wrong. Mm. And so that I've asked the Ministry of Justice and the Human Rights Commission to sort of focus on. And that's what is under consideration.
I know that you once referenced in the UK hate crime is established as an own separate offence. Is that something that's on the books?
No, we're not looking at that. And I know there's some criticism that we know there are crimes that are committed in a spirit of hatred and for hateful reasons. And we can do better at recording those motivations. And the fact that a crime is committed with hateful motives is a factor, obviously, the courts can take into account in sentencing, and they should do. But the idea that we have a separate kind of hate crime category is not something I've ever entertained. And I think it would be very hard to define. The criminal act is causing harm to somebody, and whether it's grievous bodily harm, it's an assault, whether it's some other kind of disorderly behaviour. So we've got plenty of crimes that define actions that cause harm to others. The question is it have this other element which is motivated by hate that we also ought to be taking into account? And I think we can do that, but we don't need to have a separately defined thing called a hate crime.
Mm. And you said that this review was in its final stages in March. Has that changed? What's that looking like now that we're in a pandemic?
Yeah, well, obviously a lot of the work has slowed down because officials are all in their own bubbles in their own homes. And yeah. The priority has been given to dealing with issues responding to what's happened because of COVID-19. So the last 2 weeks, a lot of my work has been focused on a lot of other areas. Yeah. Look, we will come back to it, but it'll be after Parliament resumes, I think, before we do that.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. Support 95 BFM with a B-card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.